G'day, mates. It's Peter here with my FSHD, coming to you live from Watson's Bay in New South Wales. We're on Sydney Harbour, I believe it's called, and just outside Sydney. And that's right, I'm in Australia. A couple of people have I appreciate people always get concerned about me. You know, I'm always kind of a little bit on the edge. Wear my heart on my sleeve, but I haven't heard from me for a while. And remember, we're an all volunteer organization here at my FSHT and the podcast. Yeah, it seems like it's no big deal for me to just yap on for hours and hours on end, but I've had a lot of deadlines coming up. Just been a lot of stuff going on. Actually, it's good when you don't hear from me. It's actually, what should I say? It's good. If you do hear from me, it's bad. Nah, I don't know how to say it. But let's just say that, okay, hold on. So, sorry, I'm at this place called Doyle's on the Wharf. And I got grilled flounder and a king prawn salad and good times. And but the entertainment here is seagulls attacking unsuspecting customers. It's pretty cool the way they got this set up here. They got this it's like the ideal table. It's like, wow, no one's sitting at this table. It's right on the edge right there. You can look right outside, the wind blowing through, and people come by, they set their food down, and of course you got to take pictures of all your food because you got Instagram and everything. They really should put up a sign, because it just, you can see that. I should video this. You can see it coming. These people set their food down on the table, and then they start to take pictures, and then one seagull comes by. There you go. One seagull comes by, and they start to, and that's kind of cute. And then they wave it away, and while they're not looking from the other direction, like 14 seagulls come by and just wipe them out. just happened. They're all around. I think I'm in a quiet spot. I had to restart this podcast a few times because I'm getting dive bombed by these things. But I found a quiet spot inside Doyle's. I got my Doyle's Fisherman's Lager. And their house beer, pretty good. And I just thought I'd kind of catch you up on what's been going on. As I mentioned, a lot of busy stuff in the lab. You know, I got this trip to Australia just kind of came up out of the blue. I feel like I got about 2 weeks notice on it. Friday night, I get an email from Emma Weatherly, the managing director for FSHD Global Research Foundation. You know, they're one of my favorite foundations. They're a foundation that's got it all together. Bang for your buck, man. They got a small paid staff. That's cool. Nothing wrong with a paid staff. Full-time people doing something, you know, as long as you you get out of it. And Emma does an amazing job with them. And it turns out that they have been trying to get some government support from the Australian government for FSHD research and for clinical trial readiness, diagnostics, the works. Basically, the rare disease community in Australia has been somewhat ignored, and FSHD has been part of that. Now, fortunately for everyone in Australia, the FSHD Global Research Foundation, which was started by Bill Moss, AO, and AO is very important. It stands for Officer of the Order of Australia. It's a title bestowed upon citizens for actions. I had to look this up, for actions that have made a significant impact in our society. Now, you know, Bill Moss has FSHD himself, and he's founded FSHD Global Research Foundation. I should know when this was, but a number of years back. But he's also, beyond that, he's just done a number of really important things for Australian community. A lot of a great advocate and getting a lot of things done in regards to healthcare in the country, disability, the works. And so, he's been recognized for that. But from an FSHD perspective, in addition, his foundation has poured about $20 million into FSHD themselves. Okay. Now it's currently run by his daughter, Natalie Cooney, and then Emma Weatherly, as I mentioned, who's FSHD herself. And And I guess recently I just met Tamara Fitzgerald, who's now currently on staff, and they've just made a new hire, Fiona, Dr. Fiona Martin, right, who's got a PhD in, I believe, psychology from Sydney, but has done some postdoctoral work in the U.S. and is a and very importantly, Dr. Martin or Fiona, you know, I'm a first name person, so Fiona was also an MP for a term. And so she knows the inner workings of the government and parliament as an insider. She's now an outsider, but she was an insider for a while. And that's really cool because what Natalie and Bill and put together a few years ago was this thing called Parliamentary Friends of FSHD. And the idea here was to start to engage the government, teach them a bit about FSHD, the FSHD community, and the needs of the FSHD community in Australia. And also to just kind of point out that, you know, there's kind of big picture reasons for the government to, commit some resources to the FSHD community in Australia. You know, I mean, you know, there's 8,000 rare diseases. Everybody says, you know, we need help, and everybody's right. There's only so much money. But, you know, the thing about it is, could you, you know, somebody's got to be first. And, you know, what do you have going for you that can make you kind of one of the lead diseases or lead indications that the government might support to see, you know, kind of like a test run or to lay out the model or the platform for how government can be involved, you know. And I think one of the keys to all that, and this is a key I made when I gave a talk, I'll get back to how we got there, is to have a strong organization, strong patient advocacy organization, strong leadership, great community, organized and everything. And they definitely got that thanks to Bill Moss and Natalie Cooney. So it's really, it's just been tremendously impactful. Anyway, so yeah, a couple weeks ago, I got an email from Emma that said, "Hey, we're going to have a meeting with Parliament. You know, we got an audience. Do you want to come to Australia and talk about your diagnostic and advocate for, you know, Australians with FSHD?" And I just happened to check my schedule with short notice, but I was like, actually, I can fit it in. You know, probably a week earlier or a week later, no way, but I could fit it in, fit the trip in. And Takiko, of course, well, she wasn't able to go. We need many months' notice for Takiko to be able to go because of the mouse work and the pig work and the pig projects. But, you know, they don't let me in the lab anymore. I'm in my office on my computer. And so I can take my work everywhere. I'm working on some papers and some grant deadlines and such. I booked some tickets, hopped on a plane, flew down. I thought, well, you know, sounds like a great idea. Yeah, for a number of reasons. We'll kind of get to that and what's going on. But, you know, it's just, it is true. I guess it's, you know, a roundabout way to say that did, although, give me a little bit of a time crunch. You know, we've got some papers we want to get out. We've been assembling all of our diagnostic data, which I'm telling you is going to be out soon. I've been telling people forever it's going to come out soon, and I'm still going to tell you that it's going to come out soon. Just an enormous data set that we have. I don't know, I think we're going to end up 4 or 5 papers back to back to back to back to back with our data and diagnostics, which probably be ignored by most of the world because everybody wants deletion size. But I guess I would make the case that the size of your FSHD deletion is irrelevant. What's important is the epigenetic status of the last repeat. We're putting that all together, working with Oliver King at University of Massachusetts Medical School. Of course, Takiko, and we've been getting all that together. But it was kind of a good time because I just assembled a lot of the statistics for that. And that's exactly what Emma and Natalie wanted me to present to Parliament. And so, but, you know, now, you know, Australia's a long way to go. So I thought, well, you know, if I'm going to go that way, I might as well, you know, see who else I can can visit. Yeah, I guess I could go in and out, but, you know, you're going all the way down there. There's actually no direct flight from the U.S. to Canberra, which is the capital. And which, first off, as an American, you think I'd know things better than that. I guess I kind of knew that Canberra is the capital. But I wasn't sure exactly where it is. It's kind of tucked in there between New South Wales and Victoria. I guess that's where Melbourne is. So anyway, I got a flight from Los Angeles to Melbourne, Melbourne to Canberra, then Canberra to Sydney, then Sydney back to, it's going to go on back to the U.S. And so I'm on the last leg of that thing today. Just we had our meeting a couple days ago in Canberra. But I'll tell you, it's been an interesting time. What might you be interested in? Well, so first off, you know, first stop, of course, was Melbourne, which is a really cool town. I got to tell you, never been to Melbourne. I've had my former student, Jenny Oi, is down there. She's did some work on epigenetics of heart disease and is now working on some microRNA and stuff. So that's cool. And my friend Sam is, we were postdocs together. He's part of the Baker IDI Epigenetics Institute. So there's, you know, there's a lot of really good science going on in Australia, and he's doing epigenetics of diabetes now. You know, so an opportunity to catch up with Sam. It's Assam El Asta is his name, and outstanding epigenetics. He actually ran the Gordon Conference on epigenetics of diabetes and metabolic diseases that I was able to speak at in Hong Kong. And interestingly, what I spoke about was FSHD. Because again, FSHD, I think, is an outstanding model for epigenetic disease, understanding epigenetic mechanisms, epigenetic diagnostics, and epigenetic therapies. And so I think it's the platform disease for that type of thing. And as other diseases are learning about their epigenetic aspects, they want to follow along with what we're doing with FSHD. So it's pretty cool. And again, that's the case, you know, making that case with the government here was that FSHD clinical trial readiness and diagnostics, you know, it might be the platform disease, or what would it probably say, could be the roadmap for how other neuromuscular diseases or the rare diseases may be addressed across Australia. And that's why the government should get involved. That was kind of the pitch I gave to the gang. But anyway, so first stop, of course, was in Melbourne, and I saw there's a couple of groups there. Dr. Ian Woodcock is a pediatric neurologist at, now I got to get this right, I wrote it down. He's got, where's Ian? He's at, See, I got things, got the wind blowing. I don't have my notes. Oh, there we go. He's at the Royal Children's Hospital, Melbourne, and the Murdoch Children's Research Institute. There we go. I had to write that down because I always get those two. I like to merge the two together. You know how I make up my own things. So Dr. Woodcock, he recently had a paper published on MRI in pediatric cases of FSHD. And that's the thing. He's really looking at infantile FSHD. And we're doing all the epigenetics of his infantile FSHD cases. And it's really fascinating because, one, with their epigenetics and infantile, you know, very, very low methylation. Incredibly low, but you know, so it's interesting because, well, basically everybody with this infantile or early onset FSHD has extremely low methylation. Not everybody with very low methylation is infantile FSHD, if that makes sense. It's like there's something else going on. We're trying to figure that out. In fact, you know, there's something we always discuss is, should infantile FSHD be a different disease? Now, every time I bring that up, the foundations in the U.S. Push back tremendously and say, "Ah, just screw everything up! Don't make waves." Amazing. I mean, it's amazing. The just the concept. Don't make waves. I mean, yes. I mean, I can't believe. Well, never mind. We're gonna stay positive. The thing is, I mean, what is it that makes somebody infantile? The reason this matters is because the disease appears earlier and appears to be a bit more aggressive in a lot of these kids than in your traditional, you know, teen onset of symptoms. Now, everybody gets mad at me and says there's no such thing as, early onset. And it is true. If you have FSHD, if you're genetically FSHD, you were FSHD from birth. You may not have noticed it until your teens or 20s or 30s or whenever. But then retrospectively, you might remember that you were always the slowest kid in class. You can never blow bubbles. You can do a pull up, you know, so it's really hard to say, but that's not what we're really talking about. I mean, really the kids that are clinical FSHD in their face before age 5 and in the shoulder girdle before age 10. That's the definition of the early onset, or the general definition. It just, you know, it's much more aggressive. It's really your 1 to 3 repeats, but we're finding almost absence of methylation, so very active DUX4 gene. And the question is, you know, when you get to clinical, what can you do for these kids? You know, first off, you know, since FSHD is often thought of as an adult onset disease, I think a lot of these kids go misdiagnosed for quite a while. Now, Ian's really good at picking it up. He sent us all these samples. Got a good cohort down there. For a small, you know, country, what, they like 25 million, something like that, people. So, you know, got a fair amount of infantile FSHD. And so what are we going to do? Going to be able to get them into clinical trials or access to therapy? The answer is always, from at least the pharma companies and biotech, is we just don't know enough about it. We don't have enough natural history. And that's where Ian is really doing a great job. You know, he's already done doing MRI on some kids, and to show that how MRI signatures correlate with certain clinical scores. Okay, and that'll be important if we do get to a point of where we have an approved therapy and track that it's working, or the potential of getting into, I would say, phase 3 clinical trials, probably not phase 1, 2 clinical trials. Anyway, so it's very interesting. So I had a great chat with all of them. They have a cell bank there. They're interested in doing some cell therapy. They're, you know, getting a lot of resources from Australians for use in Australia, a lot of really cool stuff. And so I got to spend the day there. Plus it's next to almost a bird sanctuary, a lot of really cool birds I got to go see while I was walking around there. So that was really fantastic to get to meet up with them. And it was such short notice, I wasn't able to give a seminar, but I think I'm heading back in April or May or something like that, and we'll get that set up. I really appreciate, actually, guys, really appreciate that they were able to even find time to fit me into their schedule, because I know Ian's seeing patients and his lab team. You know, everyone's got stuff to do. They don't need to have this yank coming down yapping at them. We had a good time, good meeting. After that, the next day I went to RMIT, which is a Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology, I believe, and Rob Capsa is there. Now, Rob is, his wheelhouse is muscle regeneration, but he's actually very interested in helping a part of establishing our saliva-based epigenetic diagnostics down there. But the interesting thing is, you know, he's got some really, I think fairly novel ideas on approaching cell therapy and muscle regeneration, and actually some pretty interesting data. I didn't, too much into it. We spent the day together with him and his team, and I guess they're not a husband wife team. They're partners, 30 years partners, but not married. Anita, his better half, and it's good to see another team working together. I don't know what we call them. We're a husband wife team. I'm not sure what. Yeah, whatever. They're life partner team. You know, and so we had a good time. And that's really important, because, you know, we've tried to find ways that we can work together on kind of the muscle regeneration aspect. After FSHD is, after the pathology is stopped, after we can shut down disease progression one way or another, whether it's a drug or a small molecule or gene therapy, antisense, whatever. Once you shut it down, you want to get your muscle back. And so that's what Rob's working on in his group, a lot of that. They actually also have some therapeutic approaches. We didn't really get in. You just kind of know people, but you don't fully know them. You know, you just kind of dance a little bit lightly. I think we can trust each other. I think we can work together. He's got just the right amount of crazy. I like it. because crazy and creativity are... insanity and creativity, I guess, are linked, very close. It's a fine line between being highly creative and being just crazy. And we walk that line all the time. And I think that's really important, to get innovative therapies, innovative approaches to science and these sorts of things. And also, I'm a gut feeling kind of guy. And if I don't like you, I can't work with you. And I'm actually open to most things, but I just get a really good feeling about these guys. I really like Ian and his team. And I really liked Rob and his team. And I thought, I can work with these guys in Australia. you know, I mean, we'll go anywhere in the world, right? I mean, that's what we do. It's a worldwide FSHD community, and we go where we're needed. We find people that are similarly aligned, and we find foundations that are similarly aligned. I'm kind of getting back to why I haven't been on the podcast for a while. I got to tell you, I get too negative. The battle that I have in the back in the U.S. driving me nuts. The amount of energy and time that we have to, it's just unbelievable. I can make the case the greatest barrier right now to a lot of success is actually the people that are trying to help you. Or they say they're trying to help you. Driving me nuts. And, you know, if I got to go to Australia to find, it's been a relief actually being here in Australia. Absolutely relief. It's actually been soothed my soul coming down here because meeting with really fantastic researchers like Rob and Ian and their groups, but also, you know, hanging out with FSHD Global, with Natalie and Emma, Tamara and, Fiona. Later today, I'm going to go up and see Bill Moss up at his place. He's got a place outside the, it looks out at the Sydney Opera House. And I'm looking forward to that. You know, I've met Bill a number of times, but never been to his place. And it's always a fascinating conversation, actually, when you ever get a chance to meet with Bill. I got to tell you, the FSHD Global Foundation, they always auction off like lunch with Bill Moss. I think I've seen that before. And, you know, if you're around, I'd take it. I got to tell you, I've had dinner with him a few times. Every conversation, the man just knows. And what doesn't matter, you talk about history, business, you know, it doesn't have to be about FSHD. I mean, just anything, man. That is a brain you want to pick. And it's just always a fascinating conversation. So I'm really looking forward to that. There won't be any seagulls there, I presume. They'll be inside. I hope this is quiet enough. I've really had to put on the background suppression. And I got out of the wind. So as I mentioned, I'm here at Doyle's on the Wharf in Watson's Bay. And I got to Robin Fitzsimons, a neurologist in Sydney, showed me this place my first time I came to Australia. Great place to come for seafood. You take the ferry out of Wharf number 2 in by Circular Quay in downtown Sydney Central Business District. And it's about a 20-minute ride over. It's kind of cool. You get a great view of the Sydney Harbour Bridge. You get the Opera House from the water. That's a great view. And then it's great. Anyway, that's why I'm going to. So I got limited time here. I got to get back up into main Sydney and check into my place on the rocks pretty soon. But in the meantime, anyway, so I hit Melbourne first, stayed at this great, this great place is called Imagine Lighthouse Hotel. It was right there in, Central Business District, CBD. You got free public transportation around, and all this. You can walk everywhere. I was able to walk to RMIT, able to walk to Murdoch Children's Hospital, Victoria Market. It's really cool out market for fish and seafood and all sorts of kind of touristy stuff. And then really, really cool. But you know, and I was gonna say, you gotta make sure you stay there. Now I'm thinking about it, I don't think it was accessible. It was just stairs up the front. Accessibility is an issue in Australia. There was no ramp up the front. I don't know what you do, so maybe that's not the place to stay. I mean, it's a great place for me. It's full apartments. I was on the 68th floor looking out at Melbourne Harbour. Great view. And since I was up all night, it was kind of cool because the sleep is screwing me up. I was working on my computer and, you know, doing stuff. I've actually been able to do a lot of Zoom calls with my Australian friends because we're finally in the same time zone. So that's been cool. Anyway, so I got a lot of FSHD work done, but it's great setting up collaborations. This building back muscle regeneration projects. I consider those high risk, high reward projects. You just got to identify the sort of fail fast type of stuff. We did that with the project that I told you about. I was out in Napa Valley not too long ago talking about that. These are some of the technology they had, and quite honestly, it didn't work at all in our FSHD like mouse models. And then they got mad at me because it didn't work. They won't talk to me anymore because I presented that it didn't work. I mean, I don't know what they're selling, but I mean, you do an experiment to test if something works, you get a result, it doesn't work, and I'm the bad guy, I guess. So whatever, man. Go sell your shit to someone else. And they are. They're selling it to Chip. But whatever. The cool thing is there's lots of technology out there. At that meeting, I saw actually what I consider better technology. And I'm talking with Rob, man, down in the RMIT. I think he's got some cool technology down there, too. At least it looks pretty good to me. I'm going to grab Ben. We're going to do when I get back home, and we'll do some Zoom calls and see how we can work together. See if we can get him some pig cells and see if we can get him into the pigs when they're ready and really put the rubber to the road and get some muscle building back. You know, it's not an unsolvable problem. It's just a hard problem, but it's a... It'll get done. So that's my trip to Melbourne. Then took the incredibly small plane to Canberra. And we had the meeting with Parliament. It's kind of cool, you know, showed up at Parliament, and the mission, the whole reason I was there, the mission was to, talk with MPs. That's what they call them. I guess members of Parliament. It's not that hard to figure out, the MPs. And I guess there's evidently two houses. I learned a lot about Australian politics, I gotta tell you. The system, maybe not enough. I learned that it's really hard to tell who's who. People kept introducing themselves to me and said, Professor Jones, how you doing? I'm like, hey, what do you do? And they're like, I'm a member of Parliament. I'm like, really? I mean, they're a lot of young guys, actually, and a lot of women as well. There was no rhyme or reason. And maybe they had a little button or something I just didn't recognize. I felt kind of bad. I was talking to one of the health ministers. He's like, oh, where are you from? I'm like, I'm from Nevada. It's next to California. He looks at me and he goes, I know where Nevada is. Okay, pal, you're the only person in Australia that knows where Nevada is. Got it. I was trying to be rude, but I mean, people are just like, huh? Get that confused look normally. Anyway. But so we had this presentation and in front of Parliament, and well, it wasn't really, I mean, we had a room in the house, in Parliament House. And it's a double session, so everybody's kind of running around and in between votes and arguments. It's just like here in some ways, people spend a lot of time yapping on prepared speeches with prepared responses, all done for show. And then you're going to have a party line vote, whatever. But in between, people were stopping in, MPs, and we had our program going for, it seemed like an hour and a half about. All right, I got my notes, but I also had to move. Sorry about that, because... some Tudor with onion rings, man. It's came and sat down and was not paying attention, and that didn't end well. They got this guy here cleaning tables that occasionally goes over and tells the people, hey, look out. But these birds are brilliant. I mean, they actually got it figured out. They got really, they send in one to distract you. And as soon as everybody's looking one way, they all come in from the other way. They don't even mind coming in the window here. Anyway, it's I'm far away from all that. And I got the we'll see how this works out. I got my noise cancellation up as high as it'll go. So if I sound kind of funny, I apologize about that. Anyway, where were we? Okay, right. Yeah. So the meeting at Parliament House, right? It was opened up by this guy. I shouldn't say the Honorable. Bill Shorten, he's the Minister for Government Services, and he spoke for 5 or 6 minutes. He's, talking about, and that's actually really good. I mean, that's the guy that you need on your side, part of the ruling party or whatever, an appointment. I imagine that's the order of a cabinet member or something for the U.S. I'm not sure, but pretty high up there. And gave a talk, and then we got to our two hosts. We have bipartisan support. That's actually, it's always important. I don't know if there's anything in the U.S. that has bipartisan support. In the U.S., doesn't matter. You just got to make sure the other side doesn't get a victory if you somehow can stop. And no one seems to care what's good for people, what's good for everybody. But we had two MPs. We have Dr. Mike Freelander, who I really like Dr. Freelander, medical professional. Real doctor, not like one of these honorary doctors like we have in government here in the U.S. A real medical doctor that's been an MP for quite a while and really understands the case. And I got to have dinner with him at the Chocolate Ball last year when I was at the Chocolate Ball. And just real fun guy, actually. Really, really fun conversation. Great time there. He's on one side of the aisle. Bridget Archer is an MP, and she's on the other side. And I know it's conservative and liberal. I'm not exactly sure. The names don't really kind of make sense to me. And then these are coalitions. It's a parliamentary system, so they're coalitions. So you have a whole bunch of little parties that kind of, and if enough all get together to tip you over 50%, you end up the party in power. And then you elect your prime minister from within, and then also someone called the opposition, leader of the opposition. That's, which sounds kind of hostile, actually, but at least it's honest, right? I mean, it's just because that's how it is today in government. It's the those in power and those opposed to those in power. The days of bipartisan efforts to do what's best for any country seem to be long gone. But we have bipartisan support for FSHD and for the government getting helping the FSHD community in Australia. And that's really amazing, fantastic. I mean, that alone, I mean, boy, Natalie, Bill, Emma, great job. I'm bringing that all together. I think Fiona was a big part of that as well, since she, again, is a former member of parliament. Really knows the system. So we have bipartisan support here in Australia. They gave some talks about how important it is. Yeah, you know, you're really talking like 10,000 FSHDers in Australia, right? And the government may not care about that many people, right? It's not heart disease, it's not diabetes. But, you know, I ran some numbers, okay, you know, when I was preparing for this. And I think about Parkinson's, right? How many people have Parkinson's? Everyone's heard of Parkinson's, right? Remember, people with Parkinson's, it's about 100,000 people are going to have Parkinson's in Australia based on the math. But they're all over 65. Yeah, one out of 10 is under 55 or something like that. Okay, so now that's 10,000 under 55. You know, when FSHD, really, especially with you got the infantile form we talked about, but mainly hitting your teens, quality of life through your whole life. Okay, and you think about financial impact. On, I mean, that's kind of things, you know, what are the buzzwords governments need to hear, right? Cost, right? They're always interested in cost, financial impact, burden, healthcare burden, and these things, you know, Parkinson's. Now my dad died of Parkinson's. Okay. I know Parkinson's quite well, but you know, he was done teaching. He was a professor at the University of Toledo. He worked for Owens, Illinois, as a material scientist, a chemical engineer. And, but his career was done. We had kids, you know, it was fine. And yeah, it sucked. It really sucked. But you know, these laydowns, it's just different, right? FSHD, the majority of cases of FSHD are going to have an impact through a much longer course of life. And through, I hate to say your productive years, hopefully people are always productive. I mean, my dad did his best even when he was, you know, in his 80s, but, you do your best. But, you know, there is a financial burden for FSHD that's going to be quite significant if people have to lose their jobs, have to change their careers, or, you know, and it just, or have to go on the health system, right, for support. And so addressing FSHD for the, is you know, going to have a significant impact. And anyway, these are kind of cases we kind of make. It's more of a, you know, rare disease is, maybe it's not fair to, I mean, rare just makes it sound like nobody has it, yet everybody knows someone that has it. I mean, it seems like everywhere I go, you see people, you're like, wow, that person, see a little, you know, you got the FSHD walk. You know, we kind of know what it's like. There's just a little bit of a look, a little bit of a smile. They may not even know they have it. I think it's just a lot more common than people realize. It may not be affecting you that much. Maybe it's affecting you more than you're letting on. You just think you have something else wrong. But we make these cases to the government. And so we know we got Dr. Freelander and Bridget Archer working for us on the inside in Parliament to try to get some Parliament to some government support. It was kind of shocking to learn that really the Australian government hasn't provided any money for FSHD research or anything FSHD ever. That's how it's explained to me. That's great. It's kind of surprising. But on the other hand, it's not surprising. Because it's nothing knocking on Australia. You know, the U.S. government hadn't done a damn thing either until, you know, Dan Perez, one of the things he had to do when he started the FSHD Society like 30 years ago when he was, you know, working with Dr. Jacobson and his mom, they got this thing going. You know, he had to go lobby Congress and try to get Congress to dedicate and appropriate some money for FSHD research. And he hammered at him, and he got it. Actually, he was able, what was that, like 1990? Wow, when was that? Let's see, it was after I had my lab. So maybe 2005, 2005 actually, or 2004, actually the U.S. National Institutes of Health put out two dedicated grants for FSHD, and I got one of them. The first reason everybody started hating me in the FSHD field is because when a complete unbiased review of grants, because everybody in the FSHD field applied, we came out first. It's like they gave the grant to the wrong people. Gave it based on the coolest project with the best scientific merit, not to somebody's best friend. Anyway, so... But Dan, thank God for, Dan Perez got that money done and took a lot of lobbying, a lot of effort on his part. He also, he also had to lobby Congress to get the MD Care Act going. And the reason we have Wellstone Centers, which are centers of excellence in the U.S. For muscular dystrophy, they're cooperative research centers that are varying levels of cooperative. But, I've been a part of two of them. I was part of the East Coast one, and now I'm part of the one in Seattle, which is really a fantastic one. It's Stephen Tapscott and Jeff Chamberlain are co-PIs of that Wellstone. Robbie Tawil is involved, Jeff Statlin, Leo Wang, Seth Friedman, and ourselves. It's just a really fantastic group to work with. But that came from, Dan lobbying Congress. And that was, that's kind of the thing the foundations are really should be doing, right? That's the kind of, that's how you move the needle. Dan really moved the needle in the U.S. And now FSHD Global in Australia is doing the same thing, right? Lobbying Parliament to say, hey, invest in FSHD diagnostics and clinical trials. Let's show everybody how to do this. And, we go wherever in the world we're needed. And wanted. We're needed a lot of places. We're not wanted everywhere. Evidently, there's kind of this common refrain among the FSHD field, evidently. It's like, yeah, Peter being Peter, he's difficult. Yeah, I'm difficult because, we don't kiss your ass and we're going to do what we think is right. I don't care how much money you got. We're going to do what we think is right. So that makes me difficult. But that's cool. Whatever, man. You find your easy friends to work with and make them wealthy. Anyway, I digress. Sorry. That's why we're here in Canberra. Well, actually, that's why I was here. I was in Canberra. And then after that, Natalie gave a great presentation about the organization and talk. Emma spoke. Then they had a couple of patients. I gotta tell you. I don't know, man. It's really just, they had Zahara Priestley. She's 8 years old, infantile FSHD. And her family, her dad, Mark, has FSHD. And her mom, Dimity, was there. And, honestly, 8 years old, I would have been absolutely terrified. You put me in front of the room, in front of a bunch of people, stick a microphone in my face and start asking me questions. And man, Zahara, just, she's a rock. She's fearless. She answered their questions. And honestly, damn near brought the room to tears. They said, you ask an eight-year-old kid, what would you do if you were cured of this disease that is, she's not wheelchair bound, but she needs a wheelchair to go long distances. She has trouble walking. Her eyes don't close when she sleeps. And, she's affected. And, but it hasn't nail hit her spirit. I mean, man, they put that microphone in her face and she wants to play on the monkey bars. She wants to ride the rides at the carnival she's not allowed to ride. I mean, it's like, you gotta get that done. I don't know. It really brought the room down that, that's what you want, simple things. You just want to be a kid. I spent a lot of time with her. She's one of the sharpest kids I've met. But you want to be physically normal and be able to play tag with your kid. That's another thing she wants to do, is be able to play tag. I don't know. First off, I was just shocked that kids want to play tag and on the monkey bars. Because I don't think in the U.S., well, they may have banned monkey bars now. At least you can't call them that anymore, I'm sure. And tag, I don't know the people. Tag is something you do on, but it's probably virtual. So. But the kids, I guess kids in Australia and Mudgee still play outdoors, and that's fantastic. And she just wants to play with her friends outdoors, hang out, be a kid. That's what we need to do. And people say, FSHD is just quality of life. Yeah, you want to look at Zahara and just tell her that her quality of life isn't that important to you? give me a break, man. We're going to get this done. The government, boy, they saw that. The MPs, we had great turnout of MPs. And then my friend Jane, you know, she got up and talked about how she had a 61-year journey of misdiagnosis. Now, you know, we don't do diagnostics, but we got an answer right for her. For entertainment purposes only, we figured out she's most likely FSHD2. And it got her an answer that she was able to get confirmed. And just to see, you know, again, she almost was a tear. You know, it's just a nightmare journey of diagnosis and misdiagnosis and being told you're crazy, being told that it's in your head, being told all sorts of, and I've heard it all from all of you, and all this stuff you get told about it, you know, and so telling these personal stories directly to these, to Parliament was just really powerful. And, you know, they had me get up and talk about diagnosis. I did the science part a little bit, you know, how we're able, we've tested about 200 people in Australia, some of the demographics. We've hit all the states except Northwest Territory? Northern Territory. And that's because nobody lives there. But we could hit it. We could get, you know, we could get old Mick Dundee could get his saliva kit if we could get something to Walkabout Creek. No problem. We'll get something to Wally. No one's asked. But it's everywhere, man. It's all out in Perth. You know, it's actually pretty, you know, 200 people by saliva testing for FSHD have been checked out. Again, not as a diagnostic. Well, in Australia, it could be a diagnostic. And the case we're making is, you know, this is, you know, we need to identify everybody. And so if it's going to be maybe 10,000 people in Australia, that's actually 20,000 people because half the people are misdiagnosed, right? So we want to find the people that are incorrectly diagnosed as FSHD so they can find their journey, continue their journey for the proper diagnosis. And then those that are FSHD, we can get them signed up for clinical trials if they're interested, get them prepared for therapies when they come, if they're interested, and also just give them answers on for life planning, family planning, and, you know, whatever, just give them answers. And so we made that case that we've been able to do that through the MyFSHD portal. And working with FSHD Global, great supporter. You know, we've done another 30 individuals in New Zealand, a few in Singapore. And, you know, we're moving. Why does this matter? You know, you may have noticed in the news, Arrowhead Therapeutics, an antisense company, is running their phase 1/2 trial in New Zealand. Let me tell you, there's a reason people would want to do these things in Australia and New Zealand, run clinical trials. Cheaper, easier. Let me tell, and the foundation support, instead of getting in the way and throwing up more middlemen and more barriers and more hurdles to go over to run a clinical trial, as in my opinion is being done in the US, they're knocking down barriers and making get truly doing clinical trial readiness in Australia and New Zealand. And that just shows you, you know, a powerful, you know, a properly aligned, well-organized, efficient organization of 4 people. Man, it's amazing. They can move mountains. I'm telling you. Boy, you put let me tell you, you get someone like Natalie in charge. She, and you want her on your side. When she sets her sights on something, she gets it done. She's got her sights set on Parliament and getting support for FSHD in Australia. Emma's most capable director you'll find out there. She does the work of multiple people. Probably needs an assistant would be appropriate. Just because of the amount of work. Tamara's doing a great job. She's relatively new. And then Fiona, I know Fiona's going to be amazing. And again, that brings up, you know, we talk about value, you know, being able, you know, having the connections, the proper connections, the science background, everything that Fiona brings, at least my few interactions with her, I met her at the, FSHD at the chocolate ball and, then spent some time with her, in Canberra. Man, she's a fantastic addition to the team. And again, you know, what you want to do when you think about these foundations and how, when you donate your money, you want to find people that are good stewards of your donation. And FSHD Global, they're making the most of it. Okay. They're doing the work that matters, the work that moves the needle, the work that's going to bring clinical trials and therapeutics and diagnostics to Australia. They're getting it done. And, they're my favorite organization to work with. Not just because I get to go to Australia. I actually, you know, I do it You know, Emma made an interesting comment once. I think that might have actually been on a podcast, that she's like, we're the only group that helps them when we're not getting funding. And actually, currently, we're not getting funding from them. Now I think about it. I mean, they pay for the saliva kits, but you know, we're still covering the cost of the testing. And I guess it never occurred to me to ask for it. I don't know. I'm just happy to help. I'm happy to help out because I think they're similarly aligned and they're doing the right thing for the FSHD community in Australia. And what's good for Australia is good for the whole world. Okay. So I'm happy. Absolutely happy to be here. I'm doing that. I think Takiko's happy because she gets a break. A break for me. She's working harder than ever because no one's there to complain and try to go home. So we're getting a lot done. It's been really fantastic experience. And Parliament's kind of cool. Get to go to Parliament and meet MPs. And then we had, yesterday, actually, the event was 2 days ago. Yesterday, we had a patient event in Canberra. And one of my friends, Susan, who's a resident, had not participated in our research testing, one of the early participants from Australia in our research testing. You know, I just made a comment. I'm like, you know, I don't know how it came up, but I mentioned that I wanted to see a platypus. I don't know. Maybe I'm just like a, you know, kind of a typical tourist. Go to Australia, need to see a kangaroo and a platypus. Only thing I had seen was the hills of Canberra city center are covered with rabbits, more rabbits than I've ever seen anywhere. I mean, holy cow. I mean, it's just rabbits upon rabbits. It's where there's a rabbit farm. No kangaroos, no wallabies, no nothing. A lot of birds. Saw some cool birds. But anyway, I mentioned it, and Susan's like, hey, let's go. Take you out to Tinbinbilla. I think that's what it's called, Tinbinbilla Nature Preserve, and we'll see us some wildlife. Couldn't turn that down. I can't believe she took her afternoon off, took me out there. We saw some wallabies, some kangaroos, some kookaburra, koalas, wild koalas. Koalas kind of like, I mean, they kind of have these sort of, they're pseudo wild. You have these things, giant, really large, hundreds of acres enclosures sort of, though, are protected from feral predators. So they're still wild, you know, you're walking around in ponds and trees and all this stuff, but you don't have to worry about the things that would normally might wipe out these animals. And so I saw kangaroos, saw some pink-breasted robins, all sorts of stuff, black swans, cool stuff, good time. I really appreciate Susan. I know you're listening sometimes. Thank you so much. Oh, and then what was that? A barrel bird? Blue barrow bird. Anyway, it's a blue bird that collects blue stuff and makes to make a nest to bring in his lady. And it was just kind of cool. So you didn't get to see the bird, but got to see the nest with all those blue flowers and milk cartons and stuff. And it was just really cool. Loved the wildlife of Australia. So that was cool. So it wasn't all work. I know it wasn't all work, although I've still been getting a lot done working on papers and grants. But it was a nice little break. But I got to talk to a lot of my Australian friends in Canberra. We had a great turnout. Spent some more time with the Priestley family. And, these people are driving great distances because flying in Australia is hard, as Emma has talked about on Facebook and a podcast and in the news. And I gotta tell you, the plane I took here to Sydney from Canberra, and no way in hell someone in a wheelchair could have gotten out. I mean, even seniors, I don't even think my mom could have gotten on this plane. She's 87. I mean, it steps down, steps up. I mean, when there's no ramp, you get these tiny planes, and I can, definitely Australia's got some catching up to do when it comes to accessibility. I know that's a big thing that Emma's talking about, trying to hit. And the other thing, I'm always concerned about being accused of being an ableist. I still don't fully get it. I know you're supposed to see the person and not the wheelchair. However, when you order a cab, and it's like the cab company's like, we send everyone home. You know, the wheelchair cab, we can't get, we're closing down restaurants, you're hanging out in a restaurant for an extra hour because you're waiting for a wheelchair cab. Or an accessible cab, these types of, in a capital city of we're not a third world country here, we're in Australia. Every single time we needed to get a cab, man, it was like an extra 45 minutes. And it just, I hope it's not that bad in the U.S. It's definitely, there's some catching up to do. And it's, so yeah, you know, the Priestley family drove in from Mudgee, which was quite a distance. I mean, you're taking time off of work, taking time off of school, taking all the sorts of, but you know, because the community is as dedicated as it can be to get to advance FSHD program in Australia, so we can bring in clinical trials and such. So yeah, you're damn right. I'm on. There's nothing for me to jump on a plane. 15 hours, man. You get on the plane in LAX at 10:30 at night, and you wake up in Sydney at Melbourne, actually, in Melbourne at 6 a.m. and you're there. Yeah, it's 15 hours in between, and then like a 2 days, but you go down on Sunday night and you wake up on Tuesday morning. Oh, that's easy. That's nothing. You know, I will always be there to help out the cause and as everyone down in Australia. You know, we'll go anywhere in the world that we're needed and wanted, as long as the people are, well, like I said, you know, it's always say you have to be similarly aligned. I got to tell you, if I can't find that in the U.S., let me tell you, it's getting harder and harder. I don't want to get into it. So, all right. Well, you know what? I got to take a little break here. I will, gonna come back. You know what? I'm gonna leave you. You know, I picked a band. I gotta get an Australian band. You know, and I was gonna pick INXS. I don't even know it's INXS. Found something else. I found someone that used to tour with INXS. They're called Big Pig. So this is Big Pig singing "Hungry Town" from their 1986 album Bonk. You know, and I don't know. I'm a fan. I gotta have the pig theme. So I'm a fan. A Big Pig, a short-lived band, but they were fantastic in the day. So check it out, and we'll be back in a second. Yeah, let me tell you a story about from the town. Where the middle of men will kiss the ground. I got my hat and a dollar bill. Lord, I feel so hungry, I'm feeling ill. Well, every time people got nothing to eat, they're scratching the dirt trying to plant the seed. When night time comes, it's time for bed. Well, now I've got a five pieces in my head. Well, it's a hungry town where people kiss the ground. And the harder you go, that's where the feeling goes. There's a world out there where people just don't care about what's going down. Right here we are, hungry town. Where the men love men and women kiss the ground. I got my hat and a dollar bill. Lord, I feel so hungry, I'm feeling ill. Well, it's a hungry town where people kiss the ground. In the higher you go, that's where the feeling goes. There's a world out there where people just don't care. All right, I'm back. Sorry, I've moved locations. I've taken my, so sorry if I sound different. I'm I'm actually in the Rocks in Sydney now. I'm at the, what's this thing called? Rendezvous Hotel, the Rocks. That's a cool apartment. I'm telling you, if you stay in Sydney, man, they got the, it's just a funky little, it's like the original part of Sydney. The barracks, you know, the old army barracks, the nurses walk. I just came up the nurses walk. These are like back when Sydney was founded. These are some of the, if I understand it correctly, some really cool artwork here too. Love it. Cafes, little restaurants everywhere. I love Sydney. Gotta tell you, I love Sydney. Melbourne is really cool. Melbourne, different feel than Sydney. Actually, it felt more international to me, at least. I don't know. It was very, found some great restaurants in Melbourne. Hit the South Melbourne market with Rob. It was pretty cool. Oddly enough, I had a Vietnamese breakfast, but that's a South Melbourne market's definitely a cool place at the beach out there. But Sydney, here up at the Rocks, I'm going to get ready. I got a couple hours before I'm going to head over and meet with Bill Moss, AO, and then I'm going to meet with Robin Fitzsimons, who's a neurologist. Actually, Robin's one of my favorite people in the whole wide world, I gotta tell you. She is just one of the most interesting people. Great aptitude for the unusual cases in neurology and FSHD. Kind of came in through this weird way through the eye issues with FSHD and Coates disease. And I always help her with her difficult cases. So I'm going to be going there in a sec. Well, in a while. It's only about a 10-minute walk around Sydney Harbor to get over to the Opera House. Anyway, I'm going to finish up on. So, I got just way too ADD, I think, when it comes to talking. I talked to him. So the afternoon, after we had our meeting with the Parliament House, we had all these MPs. We gave our presentations. Patients talking, I talked, Natalie talked, Emma talked, the MPs associated talked, Dr. Freelander and Bridget Archer, they gave their spiels. We had the health minister. Then for the afternoon, we had some meeting. We thought we had a meeting with the prime minister, and I'm going to have to look. This is Anthony Albanese, prime minister. That did not happen, but he made the minister for health and aged care, Mark Butler, was available. And so now I wasn't important enough to get in that meeting. they said, sorry, only three people can go to that meeting. You can't have four people. Whatever, man. That's fine. I think they would have, I don't know. I think I could have answered a lot of questions. It sounds like that they had that he, but it's interesting because that's the party in power. Earlier though, before that, we met with, the leader of the opposition. That's the Honorable Peter Dutton. And four of us were allowed to go into that meeting. And so there was myself, Emma, Natalie, and Fiona. And we went into that meeting, spent a half an hour with him. Actually, you know what? And what I really appreciate is he actually had good questions. Honestly, intelligent questions. I mean, just because, you suspect politicians, they're going to hear, everybody comes to them and say, hey, you know what? We need money for my favorite cause. That's going on. That's just the job, right? And, but, it was actually really thoughtful questions. You can just tell by questions whether they're just that people are kind of get it. Now, yeah, FSHD is hard. I don't expect to get the basis of the disease. We didn't go in with that, but we went in with a big picture of what's the ask, about support and why we need support. And it's not that much support to for clinical trial readiness, help FSHD Global kind of go to the next level, and to get diagnostics and the importance of diagnostics for Australia and how this will have a health impact and an economic impact. And quite honestly, I think it could help Australia actually lead when it comes to FSHD clinical trials, not just be there when therapies are ready, but also maybe, be at the front line of clinical trials, honestly. And so, I really appreciate, I'm not sure what you call these guys, whatever, I appreciate that, but actually it's AIDS. The thing is, all these politicians, they have aides, and they're kind of only as good as their aides in some way because they inform them, but they're also the people that need to carry things out, right? These guys go to meetings all the time. They have meetings all day. They're voting. They have dinners, cotillions, whatever, and I didn't get his name, but his chief of staff was just like, hey, this is what's going to happen. This is how I'll help you out. These are the paperwork you're going to need. We'll help you prepare the proper paperwork to go through the proper committees, and we'll just walk you through it. And between that and Fiona having been a former MP, and also there are two MPs that are helping out, Dr. Freelander and Bridget Archer, it's like you can, half the battle is figuring out who to talk to and to get through the network and get through the maze to get things to government. It's the same, I think, with any government. And so, we got the right people helping out. Some patients are like, well, you didn't talk to anybody in power. No, we did. I mean, it's bipartisan. You got to have both people on your side. Mark Butler's, and also Bill Shorten, they're, I understand, they're in with the party that's in power. And the thing is about it, you never know when it's going to switch over. FSHD is not a partisan thing. It's, people give me grief sometimes because I make fun. Some people have been like, they don't want to be friends with me because I make fun of Biden. How the hell can you not make fun of Biden? I don't care what your politics are. But this rare disease doesn't care about your politics. Everybody is at risk. And, it is something that I think everybody should get behind. Someone's got to be first, right? Yeah, it's not fair. You can say it's not fair that FSHD gets the first crack at it. Someone's got to be first. You got to get behind something. You can't move everything forward together. And what happens is there are a number of things that make your disease more favorable to these types of things than others. And again, key is to have a strong, well-run patient advocacy organization, and that's what FSHD Global has. You have to have, honestly, the proper connections. Again, they have that with Bill Moss and Natalie and Fiona. They can connect with the right people. There is something to be said about the number of people that have the disease and the impact of the disease. But, people like Zahara and the Priestleys willing to come tell their stories, and Jane and all the support from the community, Mitch and his parents and Susan. So many people showed up. So many patients showed up at Parliament. And these things actually matter. But also from a scientific standpoint, the timing has to be right. In FSHD, the timing is perfect, right? We have, right now we have our diagnostic. There's other diagnostics, Bionanon, there's more diagnostics coming. The cost and accessibility of diagnostics for the disease are coming way down, so we can actually do something about it. We're not asking the government to create anything, really. We're just saying, hey, we know the disease mechanism. We have many biotech and pharma companies already interested. We have clinical trials that are ongoing. We have clinical trials that are coming. All this stuff is already, the ball's already rolling. We're just really able to go to the parliament, go to the government and say, hey, we just need a little bit of a boost to get over the line. This, we've already done all the heavy lifting. Natalie and Bill and Emma, they've done the heavy lifting already. Get on board and back a winner. And then, that's the kind of, actually most diseases can't say that. How many things actually have real therapies in clinical trial are actually coming? This number of them that are coming, right? It may be wishful thinking, but you're always in a different place, right? A lot of diseases aren't as fortunate as FSHD, and that's the support of the worldwide research effort that's been ongoing, and actually for 30 years. And a lot of that can honestly go back to Dan Perez and his first $30,000 grant that he gave out from the foundation, right? There was a time when the foundations funded, but the only ones funding the research. Now in the U.S., we get federal government funding. And so we're in a different place. Other diseases can't necessarily say that. They're still trying to figure out mechanism or potentially they know the mechanism and it's just not tractable. FSHD, there's so many therapeutic approaches where you can approach this. And then after the therapy, the thing, this gets back to Rob and some of the others on muscle rebuilding. As neuromuscular diseases as a class are going to be basically treatable, right? SMA has a treatment. We'll see how persistent it is. Duchenne muscular dystrophy, they had an approved gene therapy and there's exon skipping that's showing some benefit. And FSHD, you're going to end up with, some of the LGMDs are going to be coming along as well. You're going to end up with a large number of people that need to get their muscle back. They're going to have a dystrophic or a pathological muscle environment, and they need to regain muscle. Now, ideally, we're going to do diagnostics of everybody early and get people on therapy before they lose muscle, if the insurance companies and governments will allow us to do that. But for the population now that's out there, you need to get your muscle back. And so that's going to be kind of a common thing for everybody, right? Even aging people or people with cancer cachexia. There's just a number of conditions that outside of FSH, they're going to need the same sort of therapy. And that's another pitch you can make to say, this two-pronged approach that we need for FSHD is going to be widely applicable. And again, these are the types of things that, larger entities can get behind. And these are the bigger picture problems that I think foundations should be able to push, right? Pushing the needle. So anyway, very happy to be here in Sydney. And I'm going to head over and see my friend Bill and Natalie. I'm going to meet... I'm not sure what I'm supposed to say about who I'm going to meet, but, it's just really, I got to tell you, the timing for this was really good for me. It's all about me. I know. That's what, I just get really down. I got to say I started the podcast. I wanted to give you a behind the scenes look at FSHD research and the FSHD space. And the more I pull it back, actually, I get people I work with, and I've got to be careful about names, people I know that have recently started getting into the space for various reasons. They tell me, the more I'm in this, the more I'm around, the angrier I get. You guys all think I'm weird because I'm angry. I think it's weird that people aren't angry. You know what? Well, it's because I guess when you're... When the discordant situation, or when not discord, what's the problem? When the dysfunctional situation works in your favor, you have no reason to fix it. I just think you want to fix things for the greater good. And so I guess that's the sword we're going to fall on. I may end up getting, maybe people will succeed in getting rid of us. And I got to tell you, there are times I actually kind of almost feel like giving up. I got to tell you, they just get really, you're just battling to do, to help people, right? And the people you're trying to help are your biggest obstacle. And for the just reasons you can't even get your head around. It's like, really? I'm sorry. I got to be careful. But going to Australia here, hanging out with an organization like FSHD, hanging out with Natalie and Emma, it just soothes the soul to know that there are good people still out there and good organizations, because man, I was ready to throw in the towel. And then I gotta tell you, hanging out with Zahara, just hanging out and seeing people that you're trying to help, and also people they have bigger problems than I got, and they're in a better mood than I am. And I feel embarrassed. I'm like, you know what? We can do this. So anyway, it's really good for me to spend some time with a bunch of my, FSHD or friends, down here in Australia, and go meet with Bill. He's going to be in a great mood because he's a mover and a shaker. FSHD doesn't get in his way. It does, but it doesn't, in the big picture, it doesn't. He's a mover and a shaker, and he will get things done. And, then I'm really looking forward to meeting up with Dr. Fitzsimons. And see what we can figure out. You never know. I love it. I just love talking with people that are just enough crazy, to have interesting insights and ideas. And she's just got this steel trap of a mind, of memory, of all these clinical cases she's seen in her time, and really just makes some really interesting connections on maybe the developmental origins of FSHD, but also how it can impact therapy. I think, one of the things we're going to talk about is the potential of comorbidity. Some of these cases, that are outliers in severity for FSHD may in fact be FSHD plus something else, and maybe we're being led astray. And maybe that's good news, because if we can treat that something else, then, we can actually take care of part of the problem. Also, it's important to know, because when we get to clinical trials, you want to make sure that we're treating the FSHD and that's what we're responding to. Big picture, we're going to then, the next steps here are keeping our conversation up with Parliament and what's going on, and keeping Got the chocolate ball coming up in October. I'm not coming to it this year, but I'll be there next year. I'm telling you, I think we have some good big news next year for it. I hope we will. But this year, Sydney, it's in the end of October. Check it out online, the FSHG Global Sydney Chocolate Ball. It is an event worth going. It is a spectacular spectacle. I always think of Moulin Rouge, actually, when the movie Moulin Rouge, when I think about it, it's just acrobats and singing and entertainment. Fantastic food. Luke Mangione AO, also another guy, you know, one of the best chefs in Australia, will do the cooking. And Jamie Dury is the MC. He's kind of a, I think he's in gardening. I should know more about it. He's actually a great MC, even though he didn't think I'd be very popular choice to talk last year. And so have it out. Check it out. You can donate even if you don't go. Bid on items also if you don't go. They're going to have an electric car. Well, you probably end up driving on the wrong side of the road down there. But they got all sorts of cool stuff to bid on. So check it out. And I'm still kind of sore. I told you I was going to have the pig podcast was going to be next. Still working on that. You know, it's still not. This has been the story of the pigs has been. The people are constantly complaining why it's taken so long while simultaneously doing everything in their power to delay them from getting done. It is absolutely infuriating, and it is the most FSHD space thing ever. You know, it's like, give me a project that summarizes the FSHD Foundation space. And this is it, you know, people complaining that things are taking too long while they're refusing to fund you, refusing to help you and actively getting in the way. But I want it now. Yeah, that sums up at least the North American FSHD space. Anyway, end on a positive note. I'll be back in the U.S. in a couple of days. I leave tomorrow morning. I leave tomorrow morning and I get in tomorrow. It's interesting. I leave at 10 a.m. In the morning, and I get in the same day at 7 a.m. So I love it. All right, into LAX, and we'll see how it goes from there. Just shout out to all my friends in Australia again. Susan, thanks for taking me out. Jane, thanks for giving your story. It was great to meet you, Rob, and all my friends. Zahara, keep it going. And Dimity, Mark. We're going to follow up with you guys and what we discussed and I don't know how you say bye in Australian, but, see y'all later. And, we're going to go out of here with some Jager and, I'll have some news on Jager as well on the next thing. You're going to be able to get yourself some Jager, Jager the Kid, online pretty soon. All right. Peace out.
Thank you for listening to the MyFSHD podcast, where we share with you the latest news and information on FSHD as we strive for a cure. Do you have a question for Peter? He'd love to hear from you. You can reach him at peterjones@med.unr.edu. Thank you for listening, and join us again next time for more news and information.